To my dearest friends, I am honored to welcome you back once more for a special investigation into one of the most powerful, most influential, and most infamous of organizations to have ever existed within the Byzantine state of the Imperium of Man. Ever since our earliest history, humanity has been beset upon by external horrors which defy all mortal comprehension, with demons and aliens slithering out from the darkest corners of our galaxy, with the sole aim of defiling and destroying all life in their path. But there is another threat, far more insidious to those from the outside, and this danger would instead lurk within our very souls. Traitors, heretics, turncoats, and renegades will ever bide their time, laying in wait for the perfect opportunity to strike out from the shadows, to betray their kin, in the foul hopes of gaining some form of favor from the eternal enemies of all mankind. Pathetic weaklings will willingly permit demons to corrupt their souls whilst offering up the lives of those who once trusted them, falsely believing that the Neverborn will repay their kind by imbuing them with the powers needed to ascend beyond their mortality as a demon prince of the warp. Others who have fallen to the siren song of the Xenos will throw in their lot with one of the many alien empires of the galaxy, beckoning the wretches to move in so that they too may curry some strengths from the barbaric alien conquerors. This threat is all too real within the 41st millennium, and yet the Imperial Lords have a secretive shield which exists purely to hunt down and eradicate any dissident minds. And this group would be known as the Inquisition. Most within the Imperium will have no idea as to the existence of the Inquisitors. And in truth, this ignorance is enforced so as to not expose the meek souls of humanity to the myriad nightmares of the stellar abyss. But if one is unfortunate enough to know of their presence, then they will realize that their life has taken a turn most dark, and that they should ever be prepared to keep their heads down, lest they tempt the suspicions of these dreadful hunters. The Inquisitors answer to no one but the Emperor himself, carrying out their mysterious operations with the utmost sense of secrecy. But should they ordain to investigate a world, then you can be sure that they will bring naught but death and destruction. Once they have identified a suspicious individual or planet, then there is no force that can prevent them from enacting their often fanatical sentencing, as in the grim darkness of the far future, the only true justice which they see is death. Worlds, with populations climbing into the hundreds of billions, have been entirely wiped out from an inquisitorial order of an exterminatus, cleansing the slate clean with the retributive flames of war. High lords, haughty and arrogant in their positions, will be silently stolen away, should they show even the slightest sign that they have strayed from the Imperial creed. Not even the venerable chapters of the Space Marines will be seen of as safe, as if an Inquisitor finds their actions to be somewhat suspicious, then they will be declared as renegades and purged without mercy. But to understand the Inquisition, we must first learn of their organization. And so today, I shall be providing a broad overview to the Inquisitors, beginning with their founding tale, which occurred in the bloody wake of the Horus Heresy. After, we will cover the Inquisition in more detail by investigating the role they play, of the philosophies of the Inquisitors, of how they are structured, and even of the steps needed for one to be recruited and to become a secretive agent themselves. But with this, my dearest friends, it now seems as though we must begin. Please bear in mind that if you are to listen to this sermon, that you must be prepared to prove your loyalty to the Imperium, as one day you may very well be visited and interrogated by a ruthless agent of the Inquisition. Before we begin, I believe that it is important for us to learn of the founding tale of the Inquisition, as it may help us to elucidate some of the reasons as to why the organization has become so fanatical over the long years. There are no written accounts which explicitly line out the events which precipitated its formation. But this should be of no surprise to us, given that it is inherently one of the most secretive of groups to have ever been assembled by the Imperium. Uncovering the truth is made ever more challenging by the fact that there is currently a subgroup within the Inquisition known as the Ordo Redactus, whose sole mission is to obfuscate and shroud their origins so as to protect the organization from any nefariously prying minds. But in any case, despite the opposition, there are currently two leading tales which outline the formative days of the Inquisition. The first story begins within the opening years of the 31st millennium, during a chaotic time where the traitor forces of Horus had besieged Holy Terra itself in the hopes of claiming the cradle of humanity for the glory of the ruinous powers. The Emperor, foreseeing the dark future which awaited all of mankind, instructed for his closest advisor, Malkador the Sigillite, to assemble a group of trusted individuals who could exemplify his indefatigable sense of determination for the benefit of the crumbling Imperium. In a galaxy inhabited by trillions, Malkador found but a group of 12, made up of 8 Marines and 4 humans, who had previously proven themselves as being worthy and loyal enough to carry out this most sacred of tasks. The Marines were to set out on a mission with the Sigillite towards the cold and distant moon of Titan, where they had been tasked with forming the foundations of the mysterious demon-hunting chapter of the Grey Knights. The humans, however, were to remain upon Terra. But it is at this point where the details of our tale become murky. We know that this quartet contained the founding members of the Inquisition, but we have very few details on the actions they took, which brought the fabled institution into existence. We could speculate that they worked in secret, kept safe far below the chaotic war occurring within the Imperial Palace, and that in their seclusion, that they drafted out the framework of how to best hunt down the alien, the mutant, and of the heretic. With that said, we do know that, in addition to the 4 chosen by Malkador, that there were other notable individuals who are recorded as being founding members of the Inquisition, most notably of Kirill Sinderman, former iterator of the Lunar Wolves and servant to the once loyal Horus. In any case, these humans had each endured and witnessed the horrors of the Great Crusade and of the tragic Horus heresy, and so they each knew of the ever-present dangers posed both by the forces of the Xenos and of those who had strayed to witchery. The second founding tale begins not during the Siege of Terra, but after, occurring in the scant hours which passed since the Emperor's broken body was first interned upon the Golden Throne. This story reads that 4 of his servants gathered in secret to discuss on the state of the shattered Imperium and of what the future may hold for all of mankind. They unanimously agreed in the formation of a new institution which would safeguard humanity from both the material and immaterial horrors of the galaxy, yet they had conflicting beliefs as to the state of the fallen Emperor. 2 of them, looking upon his broken corpse, believed that there was nothing to be done, and that for the good of the Imperium, that they should move forward and protect mankind to the best of their abilities, following only in his guidance, and nothing more. The other two, however, were of a different mind. They could not envisage a future without his direct rule, and thought perhaps that through some hitherto unknown means could they resurrect and restore life to the fading master of mankind. Despite their debates, the four set about laying the foundations to the Inquisition, whose agents would be tasked with watching over the Imperium, guarding it against threats both external and internal. But the two resurrectionists, still fervent in their beliefs, quickly departed from Terra, venturing out into the cosmos in the hopes of discovering the means which may be used to save the Emperor from death. In time, they would delve into the nightmare of the Immaterium, seeking out the forbidden knowledge of the warp, thus defining them as being the first Inquisitors who were truly radical in their mission. This term of one being a radical Inquisitor means that the agent will be willing to do whatever it takes to protect humanity, even if it means consorting with our eternal enemies. As to them, the means will always be justified by the end. We will soon cover the different ideologies within the Inquisition later in our sermon. But just remember that their extremism is not an outlier, and that in fact many Inquisitors will one day seek to use the tools of the enemy if they truly believe that it will somehow serve mankind. It is impossible to know of which story is true, but perhaps they are just two different interpretations of the same event told by those who would wish to sway our views with their honeyed, if not entirely truthful, word. Since its first formation, the Inquisition has stood by its founding goals of safeguarding mankind against the horrors of the dark. Yet, as more time passed, it soon became clear that, in order to make it more effective, that a large-scale reorganization was needed. Up until the 32nd millennium, each Inquisitor would be responsible for tackling danger in any form. But after the apocalyptic War of the Beast, the Lords decreed that the Inquisition should be subdivided, so as to enable certain agents to become rather specialized in combating a specific threat. Thus, the Ordos Malleus and Ordos Xenos were founded, with the respective Inquisitors now focusing entirely on the dangers of either the warp or of the alien. Later, during the 36th millennium, the Ordos Hereticus was also founded, specifically for combating upstart mutants and heretics, but we shall speak more on these groups later in our sermon. In any case, over the passing years, the Inquisition only grew larger and larger, bringing us into the current day 41st millennium, where the organization has attained such a level of power that none can truly feel free from their constant and ever-present gaze of suspicion. Now that we understand their founding, we should spend some time by investigating what the Inquisition actually is, and of what responsibilities are taken by the infamous Inquisitors themselves. It truly cannot be overstated the primal level of fear and dread which will fill one's heart when they hear even the faintest rumor that an agent of the Inquisition has arrived within their home system. They have been given one singular yet vital task, and it is to root out the alien, the mutant, and the heretic from the dying body of the Imperium, excising them like festering cancers without even a shred of doubt nor mercy. They are distinctly unique amongst the myriad of other Imperial institutions in that they answer to no one but the Emperor himself, who, as we all know, is but a fading ember locked upon the golden throne, where he slowly dims as the shadow of the august figure he once was. Naturally, the Inquisitors do not receive orders nor missions from the Emperor, and instead, their actions are based upon the framework devised by the founders of their organization, who attempted to codify and define the Emperor's most dogmatic of beliefs. As a result of this, for one to speak out against an Inquisitor is to speak out against the Emperor himself, an act which will surely warrant their arrest and sentencing for the foul crimes of heresy. None could possibly expect the approach of the Imperial Inquisition, as they operate entirely within the shadows of this bloated bureaucracy, their presence unknown to all, but of those who know of the true dangers positioned against humanity. Their agents have eyes and ears throughout the entire galaxy, ranging from even the smallest of far-flung settlement all the way up to the Senatorum Imperialis, where they keep watch over arrogant High Lords, who likely see themselves as being entirely impervious to justice. The enemies of mankind can lurk in even the most unexpected of places, and so the inquisitorial agents will spend their lives out in the vastness of the void, constantly investigating and judging those who have displayed any signs that they are not entirely on the side of the Imperium. Inquisitors are truly relentless in their search for heresy, and very few would ever be willing to suspend their investigation prematurely, as they will all have likely realized the horrifying truth that treachery and deceit lie behind every corner. This means that, as their search goes on for longer, that they may resort to more aggressive or radical methods in order to root out the terrible stench of heresy. First, individuals will be abducted, followed by entire townships, where all within will be forced to endure horrific interrogations, in which the inquisitorial acolytes will gladly utilize esoteric methods of torture that the Imperium has otherwise classified as forbidden. To an inquisitor, there is no such thing as innocence, only degrees of guilt, and so, in time, they will eventually find someone to crack. And if they reveal any knowledge pertaining to heresy, then it will mark this world as being tainted. Not only will the confessing individual be sentenced, but based upon the scale of their treachery, the surrounding areas of their settlement may also need to be purified from the stain of heresy. It is not unheard of for entire hablocks to be emptied, their former denizens sentenced for indoctrination and resettlement, and despite this clear brutality and inhumanity, it may in fact be preferable to some of the more extreme of solutions. If an inquisitor believes that the stain has run too deep and that the world cannot be saved, then they may order for an exterminatus, a sentence which will render death unto the world itself, scouring it of all life, and leaving it as a barren, inhospitable rock. Very few within the Imperium may ever utilize this option, but in truth, it is only ever deployed under the most extreme of circumstances, where there is truly no other path left to take. The decision to condemn a billion souls to death will weigh heavy on one's soul, and despite the apparent remorselessness of the Inquisition, they do not take this sentencing lightly. Those who have presided over the death knell of an entire world would not remember it fondly, but the Inquisitors understand that it is an act of mercy, where they are sacrificing billions so that trillions may yet live in peace. For the agents, their power to stand above the Imperial Lords and to sanction worlds at whim is known as their inquisitorial remit. And while it is truly peerless in the authority it provides, the Inquisitors still must remain objective and faithful to their goals of protecting humanity. An Inquisitor who is too haphazard in his sentencing, or is a little too keen to resort to an exterminatus, will be quickly identified and questioned by the scrutinous fellows of their institution. To be overly brash in their judgments would damage the integrity of the Inquisition, and it would be quite challenging for an agent to justify the destruction of 100 worlds as being somehow beneficial to the Imperium if their sentencing was rendered entirely on their suspicions, yet with a clear lack of evidence. We must also remember that power is an insidious force which always poses the risk of corruption, no matter how pure one thinks they are. Thus, the Inquisitors, in addition to keeping an eye on the Imperial citizens, will also watch over each other, always monitoring their peers, who are each in a position to bring total havoc to the Imperium, in the false belief that they are somehow protecting humanity from itself. It is true that Inquisitors are known to go rogue from time to time, perhaps because they see mankind as being too corrupt for its own good, and that its safety should no longer be considered as their main priority. These renegades will sometimes utilize their forbidden knowledge of the warp to grow bloated on the ruinous powers, as indeed they are far more knowledgeable on the secrets of the Immaterium than perhaps any other within the Imperium. Others, however, might utilize their immense network of agents to infiltrate and overthrow the office of a planetary governor before spending the rest of their days in quiet isolation, safe and unseen from the retributive gaze of their former peers. This, however, is quite a rare fate. Most Inquisitors, though quite zealous, are truly faithful to their institution, and they only seek to safeguard mankind from danger, even if it means condemning many innocent souls to an unjust yet worthy death. As another important note, though the Inquisition answers to no one, their actions are sometimes so radical and pose such an extreme solution to any given problem that the fellow Imperial forces will be left to only look upon them in horror, unable to defend nor justify their heinous acts. There are countless tales of fanatical inquisitors wrathfully subjecting entire planets to their torment, only to incite a retributive Imperial force to stand up and fight back, desperate to put a stop to the despicable treatment of the meek citizens of man. We recently covered one such situation, where in the aftermath to the First War for Armageddon, the agents of the Inquisition and Marines of the Space Wolves entered into a protracted war, which almost culminated in an all-out invasion of Fenris. This conflict was sparked after the leading Inquisitors decreed that the entire surviving populace was to be purged and replaced, a decision which forced the Wolves to step in and intervene on behalf of humanity. The Space Wolves are not the only Marines to have become enemies to the Inquisition, as in fact there are countless chapters which would now only curse the presence of a loathsome Inquisitor. The Celestial Lions, for example, spoke out in protest against an inquisitorial bombardment of a world which they recently liberated, and for this insolence they were later targeted by the vengeful agents who have since orchestrated nearly the entire destruction of the once proud and mighty chapter. Another chapter, known as the Relictors, were once rather noteworthy for their impressive collection of curios and relics, until one day where the Inquisition grew suspicious of their activities in the sectors surrounding the Eye of Terror. The agents descended and confiscated every single relic they could find before ordering the chapter to set out on a century-long crusade of penance, once again proving that the Inquisitors may enforce their rule over any, even of the Emperor's own angels. Unsurprisingly, because of situations such as this, combined with the terror the Inquisitors bring with each investigation, and of their authority to condemn an entire world to death, has left most within the Imperium to view the Inquisition with their own sense of inherent distrust. None are comfortable when in the presence of an Inquisitor, and even the chapter masters of the Astartes would likely prefer the heat of battle over dealing with these remorseless and merciless agents. As more time has passed, some within the Imperium have started to question the legitimacy of the Inquisition, pondering as to whether or not their agents are truly acting as the Emperor would have wished. Of course, such thoughts would never be spoken aloud, as if an Inquisitor were to hear of such accusations, then it would surely be branded as heresy, and the outspoken individual would almost certainly disappear, and never would they be seen again. It is important to understand that the Inquisition is not organized in the same way as of any other imperial institution. They operate as a decentralized group, where each individual Inquisitor will plan out their own missions in accordance with their own interpretation of the Emperor's word, often meaning that two different agents might resolve identical situations in entirely different ways. As opposed to most other administrative groups, such as the Imperial Navy or of the Assassins, there is no singular leader to the Inquisition to direct their forces, since, as we discussed, they will answer only to the Emperor himself. They will, however, appoint one or more of their members to serve as inquisitorial representatives to the Senatorum Imperialis, meaning that they will sit alongside the fellow High Lords of Terra to discuss the overarching strategies of the entire Imperium. The representatives, still being inquisitors themselves, will often be absent from such meetings, as they will have more pressing matters to attend to. However, they will always maintain a few watchful eyes to monitor the activity of the fellow lords. It is always a sigh of relief when these individuals are away, but when present, the meetings can take on a rather unsettling or anxious tone. The other nobles will boast of their dutiful service to the Imperium, as they will not wish to draw the displeasured attention of the inquisitorial agent. This figure, meanwhile, may use this as an opportunity to assert their authority by demanding that the fellow lords increase their efforts towards safeguarding the Imperium, sometimes threatening to remove them from office if the situation is too dire. With all that said, the representatives merely speak on behalf of the Inquisition and do not command it, and so we mustn't misconstrue their position as being truly equivalent to that of a High Lord. The Inquisitors, however, will still hold titles and ranks, much like of any other imperial organization, but these mostly relate to abstract qualities such as their influence or reputation. But in general, we can see the more senior of titles as being equivalent to the power that they hold over the Imperium. Those who have proven themselves as being highly influential agents will be referred to as Lord Inquisitors, a position which must be appointed by another Lord in recognition of their years of dutiful service. The title comes with no tangible benefits, and instead it merely signifies their lofty career, which in of itself sometimes attracts junior inquisitors who will be keen to follow their lord in the hopes of learning from the best. With that said, even the most ignorant of imperial citizens will cower before the authority of one titled as Lord, and so the rank will often aid them in their investigation purely thanks to the terror and prestige that it carries. I mentioned that the Inquisition is decentralized, and as a result of this, there is no prohibition of groups of Inquisitors working together to achieve the same goals if they are like-minded in their approach to safeguarding humanity. These groupings will sometimes be referred to as cells, but we must acknowledge that they are only temporary, and that in time, the Inquisitors will likely drift apart before setting out on entirely separate investigations. The largest and most permanent of organizational groupings, however, would naturally be of the three major ordos, namely those of the ordos Xenos, Malleus, and Hereticus. They will each be responsible for tackling the respective threats of the alien and demon and the heretic, which, as we know, pose an ever-present danger to all of mankind. The groups will be entirely specialized in how to best combat their enemy, and any Inquisitor can gravitate towards whichever order they feel most fervently about in order to fully dedicate their lives to its teachings. As a quick note, there is no requirement to be affiliated with any order, and so an Inquisitor may instead choose to remain quasi-independent, carrying out whatever mission against whatever target they so desire. Also, any agent may leave their order at any time to join with a different group, which will primarily be done as a means to expand one's mind and to learn everything there is to know about exterminating the enemies of mankind. But there is a tremendous boon which comes from joining with an order, and it would be that the Inquisitor may call upon the varied ranks of the Order's Militant. These are the military branches of the Inquisition, with each major order possessing its own militant arm that have been forged into the perfected counters against the Imperium's various foes. The Ordo Malleus, for instance, holds the Grey Knights as their militant order. These are demon-hunting space marines, born from the gene seed of the Emperor himself, and they are truly second to none in the art of locating and banishing the dark forces of the warp. Clad in gleaming silver power armor, each brother will stand as an incorruptible force who must shield humanity from the scions of the ruinous powers as mankind's final bulwark against the dark. The Ordo Xenos also have marines as their militant arm, but rather than knights, they hold command over the brothers who have taken up the long vigil to stand within the varied kill teams of the Death Watch. Any marine from any chapter may choose to leave their brothers and take up their place within the watch fortresses, a position which will require them to become experts in combating the sickening aliens which forever lurk out in the darkness of space. The Ordo Hereticus, meanwhile, rule over no brothers, but instead they command the zealous armies of the Sisters of Battle. The Sisterhood is famed for their fanatical devotion to the Emperor, and they will find great pride in assisting the witch-hunting Inquisitors in their constant and ruthless pursuit of those who have strayed from the teachings of the Master of Mankind. As an important note here, though the Inquisitors directly command over these armies, it does not mean that their forces will always submit to their rule. A dogmatic Sister of Battle might accuse an unusually merciful Inquisitor of heresy, whereas a brother of the Death Watch may be forced to stand against a renegade Inquisitor who has become overly sympathetic to an abominable alien species. Even the Grey Knights have been known to reject certain Inquisitors from the Ordo Malleus, with one noteworthy case being of when a group of knights conspired to assassinate a Lord Inquisitor during the aftermath of the First War for Armageddon, lest he bring senseless and total war to the loyalist Space Wolves. I should also mention that any Inquisitor may requisition a fellow Imperial army to serve under their command, and due to their authority, this request will almost never be rejected. Therefore, it is quite common to find Inquisitors leading over a varied army of the Imperial Guard, Space Marines, and of the forces of the Mechanicus, most of whom will be kept in the dark as to the true aims of the Inquisitor's mission. Returning to the topic of the major ordos, if we were to walk within their secretive fortresses, then we would be sure to find a wealth of secretive knowledge, which would almost assuredly be forbidden to all typical imperial citizens. Libraries will be stacked high with esoteric tomes and codices, kept under strict lock and key by the silent acolytes, who themselves would be blinded if they ever dared to read but one sacred page of an ancient book. Some of these will have been written by the Inquisitors themselves, or were simply acquired over the long years through a series of unscrupulous means. But they will codify and outline the best methods for combating specific threats, which pose a danger to all mankind. For instance, the inquisitorial libraries of the Ordo Malleus will often include dozens of books which outline the methods needed to perform psychic rituals, which will banish back the immaterial legions of the dark gods to end a nightmarish incursion and bring peace to a ravaged world. Conversely, the inquisitors of the Ordo Xenos will prefer to amass texts on the anatomy and behavior of the various alien species of the galaxy, since, as we must remember, if they can make it bleed, then they can kill it. The fortresses will also boast rather impressive armories, harboring a vast collection of mastercrafted equipment, all of which will be at the disposal of the Inquisitors. The agents are expected to be competent warriors in their own right, and so for any given deployment, they might choose to wear highly advanced suits of power armor or even carry sacred demon hammers, if it seems most appropriate. Below the fortresses, we will likely find the dreaded Dungeons of the Inquisition, a truly terrible place, wherein which there can be no innocence, and where the guilty will soon be condemned with the uncaring blade of justice. Their cells, sealed away with ancient warding runes, will be packed with rabid aliens, rogue psychers, or even of bound demons, lashing out against the pain in a desperate yet feeble attempt at breaking free. Several inquisitors may arrive intermittently to interrogate the foul wretches, but their guilt will already be apparent, and so the agent will simply try to wring out any last drops of information before passing their final and ultimate judgment. In addition to the major ordos, there are also a countless number of smaller groups known as the Ordos Minoris, which are formed to enact a far more specific task, such as by defending a region of space or by overseeing fellow imperial institutions for any stains of heresy. For example, the agents of the Ordo Sicarius will constantly monitor the operatives of the Officio Assassinorum so as to ensure that the deadly killers never turn rogue against the Imperium, as they once did during the fabled Wars of Vindication. As I mentioned, any Inquisitor may join or leave any order they like, should its goals align with their own. But for now, I think that we should explore in a little more detail as to how one would go about the process of actually becoming an Inquisitor. Given that it is such a decentralized organization, where all power is held by the individual inquisitors, it can be difficult to imagine as to how one would express an interest in joining the Inquisition, since, as you can expect, there will be no recruitment offices, nor means of contacting their agents. In truth, anyone within the Imperium could one day become an Inquisitor, but they would simply have to be at the right place, at the right time. The reason I say this is that an Inquisitor can summarily recruit anyone they encounter to become an acolyte within their service. These figures, sometimes known as henchmen, are tasked with assisting their Inquisitor with their investigations, sometimes by acting as muscle, or simply by ensuring that the Lord's personal quarters are kept clean and ordered. They will be equipped with gear from the Inquisitorial armories, but aside from any specialized auspexes or handheld cogitators, it will mostly be rather unremarkable. This is because an acolyte will initially only be recruited for a limited time, sometimes lasting for only the duration of the current investigation before being cut loose and freed from service. One may be rejected for failing to provide the appropriate support or for displaying signs of heresy, in which case they will often be stolen away and made to vanish within the depths of an inquisitorial dungeon. It should go without saying that the initial recruitment of an acolyte will not be performed thoughtlessly, and the Inquisitor will need to be sure that the individual is truly faithful and devoted towards the Imperium. There is no standardized way of sourcing potential recruits, as for example, an Inquisitor might end up being impressed with an Imperial Guardsman after witnessing a heroic deed in battle. Similarly, the agent might become interested in a gang member after hearing tales that they have reorganized their motley crew to hunt down and exterminate all traces of witchery within their hive. After a short interrogation, the individual will be summoned to join in the inquisitorial warband, serving both the Inquisitor and the senior agents to whatever capacity is needed. Conversely, some prisoners may also be recruited, which is often the case with demon hosts, where a stray demon will be eternally bound into the unwilling body of a rogue psyker, forcing them to now serve the Inquisitor in a broken prison of flesh. But if an Inquisitor sees some promise in their new servant, then they might hire them permanently to become a core part of their personal retinue. Within this group, the new hireling will be accompanied by a myriad of different specialists, including but not limited to space marines, rogue traders, demon hosts, assassins, psykers, priests, or even of alien familiars, all of whom will be entirely bound to the command of their new lord. As more time passes, and as the acolyte continues to prove themselves as being competent, then the Inquisitor will slowly promote them, gradually providing them with more important duties and more forbidden knowledge as to the true nature of reality. Each Inquisitor will handle their promotions differently, with some requiring their acolytes to undergo curious yet brutal trials of both body and soul. But this is merely the price to pay for joining in such a vitally important institution. Eventually, they will be designated as a throne agent, meaning that their lord will have seen enough promise in the hireling to now grant them with the first gifts of the Inquisition and to potentially set them on a path quite unlike any other within the Imperium. They will then hold the limited authority of their organization, which can prove quite useful during an investigation, as none will be too keen on denying the requests from one of their agents. Throne agents and acolytes may be organized into an inquisitorial warband, which will be led by a senior agent, designated as the Prime. These groupings can include dozens of junior members, and an inquisitor might deploy them as a conventional yet highly tactical army to defend them whilst they perform the dangerous step of an investigation. Once a Prime has proven themselves as being not only a capable leader, but also as possessing a sharp eye for heresy, then their Inquisitor will grant them with the great honor of becoming an explicator. This is the first step one needs to take on the road to becoming a true Inquisitor. And they will be trained in the various arts of hunting the enemies of mankind, and of how to best extract information from a suspect using various methods which would otherwise be considered as forbidden. An Inquisitor may hold several explicators at any one time, but eventually, if one is able enough, they might be promoted to the rank of interrogator, which will place them as the direct apprentice to their great master. Aside from having many more esoteric secrets revealed to them, the interrogators will also be tasked with setting out with their own warband of acolytes, to enact smaller investigations in the support of the Inquisitor's primary mission. If capable enough to handle this duty, and if fervent enough in their service to the Imperium, then their Lord may one day ordain that the Interrogator has proven himself well enough, and that they too may now stand as a fabled Inquisitor. From here, the new Inquisitor will act with the full authority of the Inquisition, being able to request warships, armies, and even to condemn entire worlds to death if they believe that it is the best route towards safeguarding mankind. The cycle will then begin anew, with the promoted Inquisitor building up his own retinue of acolytes, some of whom may eventually stand apart from their peers, and rise up as being worthy enough to become a fully fledged Inquisitor themselves. It should come as no surprise to any of you that since each Inquisitor acts on their own accord, that their own personal beliefs will form the foundation of how they choose to carry out their investigations and subsequent judgments over the inevitable heretics they find. If one is overly suspicious and believes that heresy is an inexorable plight upon humanity, then they will be far more willing to accuse innocent souls of straying from the Emperor's light, making them into far more ruthless individuals than of their equivalent peers. Since they have been trusted with the authority granted by the inquisitorial remit, they may mete out justice in whatever capacity they deem fitting. And since they answer only to the Emperor himself, it would be seen as heretical to speak out against their rule. But with that said, Inquisitors must be introspective. For how can they be sure that they are truly acting within a framework which benefits the Imperium, or if they themselves have walked too far into the darkness which they once swore to combat? Some will pore over ancient texts, hoping to gain some insight from those who founded the secretive organization, a task which, as we discussed, is quite tricky, since its origins are so shrouded in mystery. Others, however, will carve out their own frameworks, claiming that the Imperium has changed so much since the Horus Heresy that only modern-day Inquisitors can be trusted in creating the most effective doctrines for hunting down the enemies of man. But speculation is a dangerous thing, and to believe that your own intuition is somehow greater than of the master of mankind can force one into a corner in which no light is sure to reach. Interestingly, there are some Inquisitors who do not need to flail about in the dark, making broad guesses on the Emperor's will, as they have in fact been granted with the rare right to commune directly with the Emperor himself. One such Inquisitor is named as Hector Rex, and since being named as the Auditori Imperator, he is now permitted to enter into the Imperial Palace and to stand before the Golden Throne to hear of the Emperor's own words. Unfortunately, however, since his body was broken during the climactic duel with Horus, his mind was seemingly also affected, and so his words come out more as riddles, some of which are so cryptic that they provide no clear guidance, only booming terror. But with all this said, the agents of the Inquisition will generally fall into one of two philosophical camps, namely of those who are either puritanical or radical in their approach towards protecting mankind. Before we explore them in more detail, just keep in mind that these are abstract concepts and not strict rule sets, and so we can consider the Inquisitors as sitting more on a spectrum between those who are willing or unwilling to use the tools of the enemy to their own gain. The first group, named as the Puritans, hold a far more cautious view to their operation, believing that they should be adhering directly to the word of the Emperor and that they should act only within the framework drafted up by the founding members of the Inquisition. They understand that humanity is in a precarious place, but will claim that the only reason that our species has survived for so long is because we adhered to the will of the Emperor, and that we should not arrogantly try to stray from his time-tested guidance. To a Puritan, the Imperium is an imperfect representation of what mankind may achieve, but that it is only through the tireless work of humanity itself which may lift it out from the dark and back into the light. The missions they set out on will be incredibly varied, but speaking broadly, they will attempt to combat any dangers which are notably inhuman, whilst also seeking to oversee and moderate the human elements of the Imperium, who may have grown weary of the Imperial creed. Witches and psychers, who commonly consort with the forces of the warp, cannot be tolerated, as their gifts will clearly prove that they are willing to listen to the powers which exist beyond our physical realm, and thus pose a threat to humanity. Aliens, too, will always be waiting for a chance to overthrow the Imperium and assert themselves as the new galactic rulers, which obviously goes against the Emperor's wishes for mankind, painting them as targets to also be eliminated. In many ways, the Puritans would rather seek to maintain the established status quo, with some agents being so zealous in their beliefs that they would seek to stunt new technological advancements, as they were not created under the direct guidance of the Emperor. Unfortunately, because the Inquisition is so powerful, the Puritans have been successful in enforcing the oppressive shroud of ignorance which lies over the entire Imperium. Citizens should not seek to open their minds to new possibilities, and planetary governors should not seek out new methods for uplifting the standard of living upon their world, as any form of change is simply too risky to even consider. The Puritans will often clash with other senior imperial figures, most often with fellow inquisitors, if they believe that their actions are fueled by curiosity rather than an entrenched faith in the established order. There are many different interpretations of Puritanism, such as with the Amalathians, who believe that every action, good or bad, is part of the Emperor's plan for humanity, thus meaning that we should avoid change at all costs, lest it interfere with his ancient goals. This is a rather tame view for the Puritans, but a more extremist group would certainly be of the Inquisitors, who favor the theory of monodominance. These agents believe that the Imperium is the only empire which has a moral right to exist, and that in order for humanity to truly claim the cosmos, that it must exterminate all traces of alien life, leaving the stars pure and safe for mankind. Monodominant inquisitors have been known to infiltrate imperial worlds, to covertly support xenophobic cults, stirring up the populace into a militant frenzy before descending to recruit the fanatics who will be used as cannon fodder in one of the many wars against the alien. The ultimate goal of a monodominant supporter would be nothing short of a genocide, on a scale that the galaxy has never before seen, with only mankind surviving to claim the lonely stars for itself. This view is inherently born out of fear, but we must now turn our attention to the Inquisitors, who are not so afraid of the horrors which lurk out in the dark, and that rather they will see each nightmare as being an opportunity which could one day aid mankind if only tamed and broken into submission. These would be the radicals who oppose the methods of the apprehensive Puritans and believe that there are more efficient methods for safeguarding humanity if only one is willing to open their mind to an alternative choice. Make no mistake, for they are just as loyal to the Imperium as of any other Inquisitor. However, they see the ends as justifying the means, and so they will have no fears at utilizing tools which most of their peers would otherwise consider to be forbidden. they still follow the word of the Emperor. But since his internment upon the Golden Throne, the galaxy has become ever more dangerous, and so the Radicals will typically see themselves as the new arbiters of justice, caring more for practical and pragmatic solutions to the emergent horrors of the void. A radical inquisitor would view the conventions and strategies which brought the Imperium to its current crumbling state as being so detrimental to humanity that they should be all but abandoned and replaced. Thus, the agents will often seek to get more creative in their investigations, sometimes delving into the accursed methods of the enemy, if they believe them to be more efficient than of tactics formed by human hands. For example, a radical agent of the demon hunters might be more willing to trap and bind lesser demons to their service, choosing to fight against the dark gods with the powers of the warp itself. The alien hunters of the Ordo Xenos will also be open to the idea of repurposing alien weapons or esoteric technologies, which they will acknowledge as being far superior to the best of what humanity has to offer. A Puritan who witnesses such acts would be quick to brand the radical as a heretic, and in truth, it would be hard to defend their actions, considering that they will often consort directly with demons or witches in the pursuit of their goals. The two factions will therefore fight with one another from time to time, despite the fact that they are working towards the same mission of protecting mankind, though their methods behind this are very clearly rather different. The most extremist of radical inquisitors have formed a splinter faction, which I would personally view as being more of an insurrectionist cult than of anything else, and they would be known as the Phenonites. They have fully turned their backs upon the Emperor, believing that the time for venerating corpses has long since passed, and that the foolish lords in charge of the Imperium deserve naught but death for leading mankind astray. The Inquisitors now assert that they should be the ones to rise up, overthrowing and beheading the false nobility upon Terror, to carve out a new Imperium from the ashes, and to usher in a new golden age for all mankind by willingly embracing the dark powers of the warp. Further, they believe that if they can meld the forces of the Immaterium with conventional technological armaments, that they will one day be able to defeat the dark gods, which has led them to become rather interested in the heretic priests of the Dark Mechanicum. This is where the lines between radical and heretical become quite blurred, as how can one trust that the Inquisitor truly wishes to see mankind flourish and that they haven't simply fallen under the sway of the dark gods? Some radical groups, such as the Xanthites, will actually promote the proliferation of chaotic cults throughout the Imperium as it provides them with an opportunity to learn from those who have sold their souls to the warp. The Plutonian sect of the Inquisition is similarly radical, as they believe that the best way in which one can combat the forces of the warp is to embrace a covetous demon and to permit oneself to be possessed by the infernal horror. The Plutonians are most famous for their intertwinement with the Space Marine chapter of the Exorcists, where each new recruit is forced to undergo a painful possession ritual so as to fortify their souls against the horrors of the ruinous powers. There are also radical sects within the Ordo Xenos who believe that the Imperium will only break out of its stagnancy if it abandons its xenophobia and embraces the advancements brought about by the various alien empires of the galaxy. Thus far, only inquisitors within the Calixis sector have been known to follow this idea, but the so-called Xenos Hybris agents are keen on forming alliances with the enigmatic Eldari in the hopes that both of our species may rise out of the dark together. According to the custodian guard upon Terra, there is a growing cult within the Inquisition, which is so diabolical that it will never be graced with a name, and whose mere mention will incite a rapid and brutal sentencing of death. This unnamed cult consists of inquisitors who believe that the Emperor's soul is trapped within his shattered corpse, and that the only way to bring about his final ascension will be to grant him with the final gift of death. Naturally, any suspicions that one adheres to this belief will spark a retributive hunt by the custodian guard, who will remorselessly and relentlessly trace the renegade inquisitor who dares to threaten the life of the master of mankind. But we must remember that two of the Inquisition's founding members believed that they could one day revive the Emperor by delving into the secrets of the warp. And in truth, many of the more radical of sects are focused entirely on this concept of resurrection. None can be sure if any of their methods will ever be effective, but we can be sure that if they fail, and that if the Emperor does in fact draw his final breath, that the Imperium may very well fall into a new state of darkness from which it will never be able to survive. It truly cannot be overstated at just how far-reaching and powerful the Inquisition truly is. Their agents have condemned entire star systems to death, pushed alien species to extinction, and sealed away warp incursions which could have potentially grown to devour the entirety of our galaxy. Today, we have covered just a brief overview as to their institution, but there is so much more to discuss, such as of their myriad sub-factions, or of the actual Inquisitors themselves. Each Inquisitor is entirely unique from one another, with their own experiences and ordeals as having formed the foundations of their beliefs and attitudes towards the horrors of the stars. Individuals such as Gregor Eisenhorn are incredibly well known, where in this case, the Inquisitor of the Ordo Xenos has slowly strayed into becoming more of a radical whose deeds have branded him as a potential renegade at least twice during his long service. Fyodor Karamazov is perhaps the most famous Inquisitor from the Ordo Hereticus, and from atop his throne of judgment, he has condemned a truly countless list of suspects to their deaths, proudly boasting that he has overseen the execution of more witches than of the Lord Commander, Macarius. Cryptman rose to prominence for his identification and codification of the extragalactic invaders of the Tyranids, though he has since become somewhat of an infamous figure, for his willingness to destroy Imperial worlds simply to deprive the aliens from their source of biomass. Inquisitor Cotias, High Protector of the Formosa Sector, has lived a long career in the servitude of the Ordo Malleus, hunting down the foulest of warp-spawned beasts to be banished beneath each sweep of his mighty demon hammer. But now, like many others his age, he has felt the distant knocking of his own mortality. And since he has yet to produce a suitable apprentice to carry on his work, he has now chosen to walk down the path of a radical to find a means of extending his final years. He knows good and well that a demon could grant this wish in an instant, and yet, as a famed and lifelong Puritan, he sees this as a choice far too dark to ever consider. But on this point, my dearest friends, I do believe that we have now come to our end. We could speak endlessly on the various inquisitors and facets of the Inquisition, but all good things must come to an end, and so I must close this chapter once more. Thank you all for listening to this sermon in its entirety, and as I go, know that I will wish each and every one of you with a very warm goodbye.